from the Morongo Casino Studios. It's Frosty, Heidi, and Frank on 95.5 KLOS and KLOS HD1.
Frosty, Heidi, and Frank show. Wanted to tell some stories about our good friend BC, Bob Coburn, who passed away on Saturday. And we're going to get one of his friends in here as longtime producer of Rockline for over 30 years. Let's get Greg Jernigan in here. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming by, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here in his honor.
It's a sad day, but he's a guy who had a career as big as anyone. And, you know, we celebrate his life and the fact he got to do what he loved, but of course we'll miss him. The whole country was aware of this guy from Rockline.
I would say the worldwide, you know, Rockline, especially when the internet took on, it really, we started getting calls, and sometimes late at night, early in the morning in Germany, we had a lot of people in the armed forces call when it really went worldwide. I mean, the World Wide Web hit, it was, the outpouring, as you saw on your website, is international.
When Bob approached you the first time about Rockline, how did he pitch you the show?
Well, Rockline was, I was a kid, you know, I'd listened to the show in high school, I taped it, Bob was an idol of mine, I wanted to meet the Scorpions, I was just turned 18, they were on tour, and one night I decided I was going for it, and I went all over town, came to what was the old KLOS studio, finally found after hopping around town and climbing some walls and being tossed out of some places, we found out where they did the show, and I sat there, and the Scorpions came out and signed all my stuff and took me out to see Spinal Tap with them, and I watched a series of events go through that, like Spinal Tap happened to them, and I thought, you know what, this is it. I either go for this or I don't, and I knew Prince had gotten into a studio by sitting on the curb, and I went back, and I sat on that curb for a few weeks, and finally someone came out and said, Mark Felsod came out and said, kid, you need a job, we need a gopher, and I'm like, that's why I'm sitting here. So I started this gopher. And, you know, if you're a gopher, you might as well have a sign on you that says, crap on me.
Yeah, we've all been there.
And while the staff of Rockline was cool to me and the studio that we did it at, it was a jingle house that they rented just out for the show. And they were cool to me, but I had to, you know, I was literally an off-the-street kid. And I had to impress them. But the one person besides Mark who hired me, but that really kind of was nice to me, was BC. And, you know, took me under his wing and just treated me like a real person. And, you know, as the gopher, you did everything, whatever anyone told you. And it was a messy job. And at the time, it was just do whatever I could to...
But to be able to go to the college of Bob Coburn as a young kid. And he's such a super nice guy.
Yeah, do what I could to not screw up. And it was my biggest thing. Don't lose this gig. And my first job was to move Bob's Porsche. Bob was so into preparation and up to the very end. And... he had this Porsche with a very tricky clutch, and because he got there so early, the studio was busy, and he had to park across the street on Ventura Boulevard. So my job was to move that Porsche from one side of the street to the other.
Oh my God, Greg.
And he'd parallel park it with inches, and you know, just a nightmare, but I earned his trust from there on, and I eventually moved up to the phone screener, and Bob knew that was the front line of the people that were going to make the show or break it, because if I didn't give him... good in, good out. And so he really took me under his wing.
So you mean it's Sammy's fault this show sucks? Because she's our phone screener and she's the front line here. It's your fault, Sammy.
Not an easy job. You have to get, it's like a 30-second psychoanalysis of every person that just called and can I put them on the air.
Will Bob like this guy?
A national live radio show that, you know.
Did Bob ever get upset with you?
Oh, yes. We had, you know. You know, when I became the producer in 2003, the show was going to go away, and Bob bought it. And when he asked me to be the producer, I was very proud of that. And I didn't care how I got the job, but I wanted to impress him. And at that point, we were going to take it to a very boutique, almost like a mom-and-pop show, because we were going to take it back to the old AOR style. It was not the big machine that made Rockline what it was, that Global Satellite Network had put together and other radio companies had taken on. It was me, Bob, a screener, a prepper, and Jimmy Rash, who would also...
It's a small crew.
Yeah, going through 30 years together, it was Jimmy Rash, myself, and Bob. Jimmy Rash puts all of those Rockline replays together that you play.
You mentioned AOR, Album Oriented Rock.
Correct. So we were going to go back and really bring in, like, coming, kind of like walking into a record store. And we did. And so at that point, he was my boss. And we had a great time. But yeah, you know, your family, every, of course, you go through ups and downs and things and that. But we always resolved it. We were in it for Rockline. It was a labor of love. We weren't doing it for free.
Right.
And he needed to make a profit. But that was what we were in it for.
Did he know everything about every band and every person was in every group? Was he a total music trivia guy or just a music lover who wasn't concerned with
No, he names was. And... He knew, you know, he had seen Hendrix back in the day. Steve Miller had played at his high school. He went to Bryan Adams High School in Texas. He had lived it. And he, you know, he'd hosted Night Flight. He had hosted Cal Jam. He had hosted the US Festival. So he was very entwined with rock and roll history and taught me a lot. And what gaps were there, we all filled in when we did the prep for the show. You know, we had meetings before the show. We all came in with our own questions. And it was so that Bob and I knew that the crew, anything that came at us throughout the show, much like you probably have to deal with, you could seamlessly move through it. He could drop in. I could drop something or type something to him. Oh, we discussed that or we went to that, much like an athletic team.
Did Bob ever have a favorite Rockline guest? One that it was just like, oh my God, that was the best.
You know what? We had some great shows. I think Stevie Ray Vaughan was one of our favorites. Obviously, when a Beatle was on or a Stone was huge. He really loved when Nils Lofgren was on. You know, that's an odd one. But he, when we played live, when we started going to play a lot of live guests and live, when we had REM live, when we had, all the way up to the end in the studio in Burbank, we had so many great people. Ronnie Montrose come in, Zappa versus Zappa. Or play Zappa. I would say his favorites were the Beatles shows. I mean, I know he loved doing Harrison and McCartney,
that's incredible.
He also loved the blues, and if rock and roll is a soundtrack to your life, Bob, well, I said this the other day on the air, was that blanket that you rolled up in while you were listening to that soundtrack.
The opposite of Heidi's question. You know, we've had some guests.
This is the opposite of Heidi. she's a wet blanket you roll up in.
Were there any artists where it just didn't work at all? I mean, we've had a few people we've interviewed in this show during our history.
Never having them on again.
Yeah. Just total disaster.
Total. Whether it be, you know, the artist not... we didn't have too many that didn't show up. Rockline was pretty, you know, you didn't...
respected.
You didn't blow off Rockline. Sure, we had some went sideways. We had some that... it was live. Callers would swear. The bands would swear. Sometimes all the prep we could do and the person just wasn't into it, you know, I had to do a lot of the, Bob didn't like to spend time with the bands before the show. He really wanted to be fresh and walk in and not have, so I had to do my song and dance with them before the show usually and then afterward. So, I could give them a good vibe, like, you know, so-and-so's not into it, or you're going to have to really work this angle or this angle. I remember doing IDs after the show with people, and some of them were really cool about it. And we did a thing called the encore question where each artist had to leave a question for next week's artist. And sometimes that went really well. And sometimes there was such a clash, they had no idea who it was and we would have to work it out. But I remember telling him afterward, like, I think one of the guys in Fleetwood Mac, Lindsey Buckingham, I'm like, can you read some IDs for me? And he's like, no, I don't think I really need to.
Ooh.
And it wasn't that he didn't want to. He's like, and I'm like, yeah, you've sold enough records. I don't think these are going to help you too much.
Greg Jernigan with us. He is the producer, longtime producer of Rockline with Bob Coburn. Bob Coburn, legend in the business, who passed away from lung cancer on Saturday at around 12:30. And I mentioned how you were helping tech support, putting a studio in his home so he could still do his show here at KLOS. And how important that was to Bob, that even though he was going through the fight of his life, he still wanted to be on the air for his fans.
He did, yeah. And he was really excited about the way and the path that KLOS was on. Myself, listening all weekend, and when I'm listening lately, it's exciting. You were playing some much better music, and he was very wanting to be a part of that, and he loved the freeform that he had and the freedom that he's been given by Keith. And so, yes, he did want to do that. And
I think he had, a lot of influence on the beginnings of that ball rolling here at KLOS. Because, Keith is always about collaboration and an open door. And so when you have Bob Coburn on your team going in there and saying, I think we need to go this way a little bit. And, Keith's like all down for it. So, up to the, yeah, to the very end, and what the station is sounding like, it's because of Bob and his influence over Keith.
You can hear it. I did do all the tech support for him at his house. I spent a lot of time over the years out there swapping out different computers and stuff. Spent a lot of time with his wife Lynette and his family, and a lot of dinners there. And you know, my heart goes out to them. I'm very close to them. But yes, up until a few weeks ago, I was out there. He was going through things and wanted to give me stuff. Had a lot of duplicate CDs that he wanted to get rid of. It was fun because we were going through things, and I was like, Bob, you know, here's another signed Jimmy Page CD. You know, here's another one. Oh, here's Queen, Freddie Mercury. I don't know if you remember you had that one. And it was pretty cool. But he wanted to get that studio done, and we just didn't have a chance. I was out there. I last saw him at the Ride for Bob event.
Yeah.
And we texted back and forth since then, and I was trying to get back out there. And, you know, we sat down, watched a lot of sports that day, last time I was there, and Bob loved to break new bands. You know, that was a big thing for him. We had an active rock version of Rockline. It was more of an alternative, not alternative, but more of today's younger bands, and then we had the classic rock version. And I have a band I'm working with, and I really wanted to show it to him and get his approval. And I've done a documentary on this kid, and you know, we sat there and watched it, and we kind of cried together a little bit about it, and then started talking about life in general. And his comment was, you know, I'm not afraid of this. I'm not afraid of this path I'm going down. I've lived a great life. And you know, I said, Bob, you've given me the life I dreamed of in high school 1,000 times over. And he said, for me, it's a million. And I know that's tough. And then we texted a few more times after that, and we were such big sports fans, and I was trying to get back out there to finish that. And when he told me the other day that I, you know, we were talking about, we're all huge sports fans, and you know, Dallas Cowboys, you know, Bob, and the Angels, and I'm a Dolphin fan, sadly. And he, I said, you know, boy, he said, the week text before, he'd said something about football, so I texted him back, and I said, wow, our teams are really rolling. I said, Cowboys are like a freight train now, and Dolphins are kind of like a caboose on three wheels, but we're winning ugly. And he texted me back and said, you know, I haven't been able to follow the Cowboys the last few days. And I knew it. Yeah. At that point, I like it. Bob can't follow the Cowboys. There's only a few things that'll get in the way of that.
Yeah, Lisa, you said you looked on our Facebook page. There's a Facebook page that KLOS set up for Bob. And that quote you read earlier in your newscast that I enjoyed so much, something about, you know.
Since God has seen fit to take all our musicians, it would seem that he now needed a host. He chooses only the best.
Yeah. That Facebook page, you know, I sat around all week and I had a lot to do and I didn't do a damn thing. And I looked at that in my phone. I didn't put down on Saturday. And Saturday was tough, but Sunday was tougher. And I just kind of sat around and looked at that thing and the outpouring and what you see of not only the industry people talking about what Bob did for them across and, you know, in Chicago and these little stations back and forth, but the impact he had on the fans and what it did to me, because it all run together after a while. We did a lot of shows. And I loved hearing the individual stories from the fans and the industry people that had worked it, and it was really touching because it was a lot of what got me to do it. You know, he was the only thing before the internet. He was the only guy playing Van Halen and Ozzy and metal before metal. And you know, I'm a diehard metalhead, and that's what got me into wanting. You know, my whole career came out of Rockline. I got on the show to work. Bob and I one night were hanging out afterward, and I said, Bob, Rob Halford's on. I'm going to follow him back to his hotel. And, you know, probably not great. The smartest thing in the world back then. Yeah. And we met Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden, and I had to work for Iron Maiden's label. So for 28 years, I did that and then Rockline at night. And I just, you know, all up to the bitter end, you know, Bob and I just walked that path together.
You know, what Bob did and did so well for so long, it's now extinct. I mean, he goes back to the days of, you mentioned Freeform. He was doing radio 70s, 80s, 90s. That sort of radio is just not around anymore. Mm-hmm. He was the last guy to do it and did it better than anybody else. And now that we've lost him, no one else can do it again. And we were fortunate to have to be around when he was doing what he was doing. And if you are of a certain age, remember there used to be a lot more what he did, and he was pretty much the last one to still do that type of rock radio, and now it's gone forever. Yeah. There is no one to take his place.
I don't know who's going to fill those shoes. I would love to see. I'd love to see the show go on, but I don't think anyone can fill those shoes. I'd love to see it go on and, you know, somehow be played. There's a great archive there of rock and roll history.
Greg,
told
was there
by
anybody
the host.
Throughout the years that Bob always talked about wanting to have on Rockline, but was just not able to get it done?
The only two people we never got on, it's easier to say who wasn't on, and it was Springsteen and Clapton.
Just couldn't get
and
it.
And they just didn't need to do it. They were pretty big.
That's the reason?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, they just, you know, they were a little probably insulated at that time. They're mega stars, and just those paths never crossed.
I don't remember the exact detail of the story, but when Bob first started in radio, when he went and did an interview, and I can't remember the name of the band. You probably know the name of the band, where he did the whole interview, and he gets home, and he hits, you know, play, and he forgot to hit the record button. And it was like his very first interview, and was like, he was really nervous to go to the hotel room and see this band, and oh my God, it's gonna,
I forget what it is. I want to say it's someone like Free or The Faces or Bad Company in that vein.
They might have been Bad Company.
Imagine that feeling. Ugh.
And he gets home, hits play, and never hit record.
Cameron Crowe posted a great thing on your tribute that of a story Bob always told about. It's almost like out of the movie.
Almost Famous.
Almost Famous. Thank you. And where Bob went to his house and you know and preached to him about how important it would be for him to do radio and that, and Cameron made a mention to that in the post. I thought that was pretty cool.
How much of a serious, intense stickler was he in that? Was he so critical of what he did and critical of always striving for perfection that he had a hard time enjoying what he did? I mentioned David Letterman, who's notorious for being a funny guy on television, but I guess he was a jerk to be around because he was so, if something went wrong, he'd let you know and he'd overanalyze every single thing that didn't work. Did Bob enjoy things enough, or was he so into his work where he was so intense about it that maybe he was a very critical, self-critical person who just was very intense all the time? Was he intense all the time?
No. He was it was a live show. We had to roll with it. We wanted it to be perfect, but it was impossible but for the most part it was. The preparation that Bob, like I said, did and what we did before the show made it just so smooth that if there was going to be a problem, it was going to be technical, or it was going to be a caller, or it was going to be me, probably.
It's Greg's fault.
Yeah. Thank you, Greg.
And, you know, it's funny because we had a lot of weird and incidents with Motley Crue. And right up to the end where we didn't have a problem with the band, but one of my funny moments was they were on for their last show on the Saints of Los Angeles record. And one thing we tried not to do is plant stupid ideas in each other's head before the show and make jokes because we had a lot of fun. And I said something like, Bob was going to say something like, all filler, no killer. And I go, all killer, no filler. Or all filler, no killer. Or backwards, I'm sorry. And I planted that in his head and he came out of the box and he said, all filler, no killer. And Tommy Lee goes, did you just say that? And Bob looks at me like, and I was like, and so Bob had this really funny stare or grin. You know, he'd always give you this grin like, yep, that was the way it was going to be, or that's what I told you. He had a team. We were so smooth in terms of I could look at him and he would
know
tell
exactly.
Yeah, exactly, or type to him. And, you know, one of our favorite things was someone would come up with, start talking about a song, and we'd go, oh, that's not the next song. Let's get that one ready because we're going to go to that one. And then he would know, and he would just go to it. You know, he loved to point that finger and made him feel like he knew that the machine behind that was going to take care of him. And
engage.
Knowing that it knew what he wanted to get done. So, no, he did not. He was not uptight about it, and he had a lot of fun with it.
What was BC's relationship with Iron Maiden?
Iron Maiden, so it had a lot to do with KLOS, too. I had really, you know, as I just said, Iron Maiden about me. I had pushed him to really, and he really became a fan the last few years, the last 12 years. So we pushed one weekend. Iron Maiden became the beast that it is again today. It was, you know, metal had ridden its crest, and Iron Maiden kind of rose from the ashes and is a humongous touring act right now, flying themselves all over the world in their own 747. And so I pushed Bob to see if we could get them on the show because they only did a select few interviews out of in the U.S. and he did it. We put them on Rockline. KLOS subsequently brought them on and put them on Seventh Day, and they did that. So Iron Maiden really, you know, became part of the Rockline family, and we to the point now where I got a beautiful letter from their Rod Smallwood, their manager, over the weekend. And the last shows we went to was Iron Maiden a few months ago before Bob was diagnosed. But one of the funniest moments was we were down in Irvine a couple of years ago when they were playing. And we went backstage and Mike Piazza was there. And, you know, we'd done everything in terms of rock stars. But we really got excited and kind of giddy about sports stars. And being huge athletes, big sports fans. So Mike Piazza was backstage and me and Bob were kind of like, whoa, check it out, it's Mike Piazza. And then we ended up kind of standing by him. And during the show, Bruce Dickinson, the singer, says, I'd like to thank a few people in the crowd. And one of them standing right over there, and he looks just like James Hetfield. And he was pointing at Bob. And man, the swarm of Iron Maiden fans that all of a sudden just wanted to reach out and touch Bob was insane. And he caught us all off guard, Mike, him, me, his wife. And that was pretty cool. And that happened to us once with Rush backstage in Vegas, too, with an angel. It was pretty cool.
Of all the people you've interviewed, you said like a lot of rock stars and sports stars. You had Bill Clinton and Al Gore on a show once?
We did. Bob was very proud of that. You know, Bob was very into history and politics and very up to speed on it. And we did do the when Bill Clinton was running for office, we did do a show with him and Al Gore, and I believe Bono called in on that show.
God,
you know, just a few people.
Wow. Just a few people.
Bob was very, very proud of that show and the way it turned out, and it was pretty cool for him. And getting vetted by the Secret Service was pretty cool, too.
What's the story of Bob Coburn, a toilet, and a telephone?
We did the show a few years ago out of... and this is where it's a live show, and you kind of have to diffuse situations that may not go the right way and self-inflicted sometimes like this. They had a very small bathroom that opened inward, which was kind of stupid. And Bob opened the door, and the artist was standing there, and Bob knocked his cell phone out of his hand, and it fell in the toilet. And Bob comes up to me afterward, and he's like, oh, you won't believe what I just did. I'm like, that's awesome. And the guy was ticked. And then we had a room much like this, which is, oddly enough, this is the last place we did Rockline, this building and this studio. So I'm pretty, and I can see the construction is still continuing. They had the glass window, and then the guy was like, oh, there's an audience watching you. I didn't know I was going to be in a fishbowl and this and that. So it was all, and Bob just smoothed it right out, and we just like, dude, you know, this is the way it is, you know, it's all good. Well, here's some rice, dry your phone.
Was there ever a time where you had a band or a singer in where they were so hammered, out of it that you're like, I don't know what to do with you, but this is kind of awesome?
Yeah, no. I've had one OD in the kitchen. I won't mention their name, but the slap fest that they tried to get to waking them up, and they pretty much did the show with their head between their legs.
Wow.
Seen a lot of things. Sam Kennison was pretty crazy back in the day. I will say some shows with Ozzy were pretty crazy. Motley Crue was... Yeah, one show we went through the whole, like, I love you, bro, I hate you, man, to I love you, man, in a matter of 90 minutes with a member of that band. And we also had the same member take us off the air one day, and we were doing a show in Texas, and he passed out on the mixing board, took us off the air. Years later, I saw Mick Mars, and, you know, Mick Mars doesn't say anything, and I said, you know, I never thought I'd say thank God for Mick Mars to carry that show. But, yeah, there was a lot. Zakk Wylde had a really good time. He always hung out, and I believe the JD had a little comment the other day about Dusty Hill coming in, and I think that was actually Zakk Wylde.
Ah.
So, yeah. Seen lots of the...
Did you have a lot of bands want to take you out afterwards?
Yes.
Like, let's go!
Oh,
and you guys
yeah.
would go out and just have a yeah. hell of a night?
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of good times. I remember when I was the gopher, Rat one time was at the Peak, and they took me back to watch Dress Rehearsal. Kiss has always been extremely good to us, and I've always been a big Kiss fan. But when Bob got into wine, Bob was a huge wine, you know, guy. And so he'd bring these great wines down, and afterward, you know, have the guests would hang out, we'd have wine with him, or he'd have wine with him, and it was always a little good, you know, party afterward.
So he was more of a wine guy rather than a beer and shot guy.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Didn't he give you a bottle of wine? Didn't he introduce you to some bottle of wine?
Yeah.
Early on, we started here at KLOS. Mm-hmm. Bob bought her some nice
probably.
Bottle of wine.
Yeah, and then we sort of started swapping, you know, back
yeah,
and forth.
That created a nice atmosphere, though. No one on the show ever really partaked in anything like that. But even George Harrison, one of the biggest show that we did, the job that Bob really liked, BC. I didn't really call him BC, so it's hard for me to call him that. George Harrison showed up, and he was already a little tipsy, and I was the gopher, and I used to, one of my jobs was to hang the vinyl Rockline banner. And after the show, we were, Jeff Lynne was with him, and George had brought this, we had gone to the Guitar Center and gotten this guitar. It was a $10,000 guitar, and we just set it in the corner, and we did this a lot, just hoping they would pick it up and strum it or play it during the show. And so George did the show with Bob, and he did pick up the guitar and played it, and then afterward, we're doing a pictures of, they're doing pictures on the vinyl, and George was a little tipsy, and he leaned into the vinyl, and the vinyl collapsed on him, and of course, everyone's eyes are on me, like, I'm like, the dude leaned into the vinyl, what are you doing?
It's not my fault!
The vinyl's not anti-Beatle. And so I was like, afterward, got out of that mess, and the two of them hung around after the show and played Beatles songs with us for 2 hours.
Oh,
wow.
It's just like insane.
What
so
a
that
life.
Kind of stuff would happen.
Is it true, Johnny?
Oh, and the guitar he left with, and the owner of the show, Howie Gilman, who I owe a lot to, said, "Where are you going with the guitar?" And George said, "It's me fee." And that $10,000 guitar, I believe, is at Tom Petty's house right now.
Oh my God!
Oh, yeah, that's so great.
They were doing
the
Wilburys, and then that ended up in Tom Petty's house.
That's so cool.
Is it true Johnny Rotten walked out?
So another one of the shows was Johnny Rotten was on. It was a, we sometimes with, you know, not the biggest bands, we would do a double show, and Korn was the other guest, Jonathan Davis, and Johnny Rotten was cranky, and we didn't kind of know if it was an act or if it was not for real. I mean, at one point, I was trying to get him to sign my record, and he was arguing with me that it was a bootleg, and it was called Hippie Smell, I think, and I was like, it's not a bootleg, and then he put me in a headlock, and I gave up at that point and knew he was serious. So Bob said at the end of the show, well, I'm going to wrap this up. We're going to play God Save the Queen, and we've got Jonathan Davis coming in next. Who's that guy? I don't know who that is. And he goes, don't play that song or I'm going to walk out. And Bob says, we're playing the song. And he walked out. And as he walks by Jonathan Davis, he's like, who are you, mate? And poor Jonathan Davis is now one of the biggest rock stars in the world. He's just like, ugh. So yeah, that was quite the funny story. I've got a little Polaroid.
I'm glad Bob played that song.
Yeah, yeah, yes, Bob.
My show. I will play the song, and we're moving on. Greg, thank you so much for stopping by. Seriously, Greg Jornigan, a longtime producer and longtime friend of Bob Coburn, who was the KLOS family, passed away at 12:32 on Saturday. And he will be missed. And I know earlier you said you always were trying to impress him. And having a legend like him in the hallways, that when he did the midday show after our show, he would say like a moment that he heard during the morning show that he enjoyed. And I always looked forward to that in the hallway because it's like, yeah, it's Bob Coburn. If he's going to say, hey, that was really funny this morning what you guys did there. And I was like, thanks, Bob. I mean, that was like true justification for what we're doing, hearing him say that. So I know what you mean by wanting to impress the guy. And I met his lovely wife and family at the Ride for Bob. And
did you buy the Slash guitar?
I did.
Okay, I'm the one that brought it and got it.
Yes, so, yeah, I bought the Slash guitar. And I think then I'm pretty sure that the Ride for Bob is going to continue and be an annual thing. We'll definitely do it next year, and I expect to see everybody show up and all the proceeds at the auction, everything going to help cancer research, because cancer is going to affect everybody at some point. It's affected me. My mother passed away earlier, and Bob was there for me. And then to hear him being diagnosed, that was awful. And then how fast it took him.
I walked through the same thing with my father, sadly, about 18 months ago. So walking through it with Bob again was pretty almost identical. So
thank you so much for stopping by, Greg.